Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. I want to begin by wishing my son, Benedict Joseph Peter, a very blessed birthday. I also want to start off by telling you that as it is Thursday, we will be joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen to talk about current events in light of church teaching and church news. Now, we'll cover quite a number of pieces, some in depth, some quite heartening, in fact. But there will be a few pieces that we will not be able to get to today that I do want to draw your attention to. The first would be that the Vatican is now having an exposition to celebrate the great friendship between Pope St. Paul VI and the Thomist revival genius, Jacques Maritain. And this friendship that spearheaded a continued conversation on the dignity of the human person that catalyzed and fueled a deeper commitment from both men in terms of grounding in biblical anthropology, in the Church's historical tradition of theology, and in orthodoxy, in the foundational magisterial teachings of the Church. So this is an important friendship. This was a relationship that had real bearings. In 1965, this was about the close of the Second Vatican Council, Paul VI gave Jacques Maritain a message directed to men of thought and science. And the whole premise here is that the Christian, contemplating truth, has an obligation to continue to meet natural science with the bearing, brilliance, and divine illumination of divine revelation, that is, theology and the teachings of Jesus Christ. The other piece of news is that Al Pacino met with Pope Leo XIV at the Vatican. He is in Italy shooting a film on the history of the Maserati brothers. And so they visited Pope Leo XIV and gave him a model Maserati. Now, we move on from there to talk about the history of secularist violence. Religion and violence, they often cite it as going hand in hand. But when we think about secularist violence, we see where the root really stands. It is religion understood poorly, religion that has been secularized, that really begets the truest violence. And so we're joined by Thomas Howard to dive deeper into that question. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, June 19th. It's the Feast of St. Romuald. Today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need. VisitingAngels.com. Today is Juneteenth, commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. These folks are enjoying the Juneteenth Atlanta Parade and Music Festival.
To still come out here to be in the edge of the culture and stuff is just phenomenal.
To be communal, to celebrating the day.
It's like we celebrate 4th of July, Juneteenth is the same thing as that.
It marks June 19, 1865, when Major General Golden Granger and his 2,000 Union troops arrived in Galveston Bay, Texas, proclaiming that more than 250,000 enslaved black people in Texas were free. President Trump's decision about U.S. intervention in Iran will come within 2 weeks.
Nobody should be surprised by the president's position that Iran absolutely cannot obtain a nuclear weapon. He's been unequivocally clear about this for decades, not just as president, not just as a presidential candidate, but also as a private citizen.
Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says Trump is allowing the possibility of talks with Iran to play out for the meantime. Leavitt said correspondence between Iran and the U.S. is ongoing. A SpaceX Starship blew up during a test at Starbase, Texas. Video online shows Ship 36 exploding into a massive fireball. It was expected that Ship 36 would be used for the next Starship launch. The explosion happened during what's called a static fire test. And the Los Angeles Dodgers say ICE agents were denied entry onto the grounds of Dodger Stadium. In a statement, the team said ICE agents requested permission to access the stadium's parking lot this morning, but were denied entry by the organization. It's not clear if the agents were there to conduct immigration raids or if anyone had been taken into custody. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Nearly 50% of adults in the United States are reported by Pew Survey to have some connection to the Catholic faith, whether in an ancillary manner or to some direct connection, according to new data from Pew Research. Joining me to have a conversation about this and other things pertaining to church news and current events in light of church teaching is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Matthew, thank you for making the time. How are you?
Oh, great to be with you, as always. It's a joy. It really is every week.
And I greatly look forward to these segments. And I think this is a good lighthearted piece for us to touch on. So 50%, that's no small feat in a country as large as the United States.
No, you're absolutely right. It's a statement in a couple of different directions. The most obvious is that this is a statement that the church truly has such a massive presence in American culture. Mm-hmm. But it's also a statement in many ways of failure, given that, all right, 50% of adults have some connection to the Catholic faith. Well, I would like to see all of them Catholic. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's a discussion that goes well beyond certainly the purview of this poll. But I think it does also give us a very interesting snapshot as to how the lives of average Americans have been and are being touched by the Catholic Church in right. some fashion. The other thing that's worth noting is that the survey by Pew, which is always a very, very good mm-hmm. Place to go for data on religious practice in the United States, it was conducted before the passing of Pope Francis, and actually before Pope Francis went into the hospital. So that was on February 14th. This poll was conducted in early February, the first few days of February. So what that tells us, too, is that I suspect that if you were to go back, and I know that this is likely to be much surveyed in the coming weeks and months, if you go back and you survey many of these same people, the impression that was left on them by the church is probably even greater now, given the heightened focus on the illness and passing of Pope Francis, and then the election of Pope Leo XIV, and the election of Pope Leo XIV, oh, who, by the way, was born in Chicago, Illinois.
So from this, can I quote Dr. Matthew Bunsen in saying that the White Sox have been officially baptized as Catholic?
Well, you can. I don't know where that leaves the Chicago Cubs, but that's another question.
Isn't Ditka considering coming in next? Sorry, I have to stop there. So now, even as I'm reading this, it's wonderful that some of these attributes, for example, number one, this language of having a personal relationship with Jesus mm-hmm. Christ as being foundational by the survey applicants to their Catholic identity, devotion to Mary, especially that first part, there's an almost evangelical tone to the language, but it is inherent to the Catholic faith. And so this isn't just some kind of a cultural norm here, that there's almost a deeper appeal to identification in the Catholic faith.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And obviously that personal relationship is something that as Catholic we have to have. We have to have that encounter, and then we have to have that relationship with Christ, particularly through the sacraments. But I was struck, as you noted, devotion to the Blessed Mother at 50%. Mm-hmm. That is also very revealing, because that is one of the great hallmarks of Catholicism. And at a time, too, when we are seeing the withering effects, the damaging effects, toxic effects of sort of militant feminism mm-hmm. And relativism that is systematically in some quarters destroying a proper understanding to the point where we cannot actually answer the question, what is a woman?
Right.
That having that devotion to the Blessed Mother is a perfect antidote to that. It is the answer to those questions, what is a woman? Well, we need look no further than the Blessed Mother. But then also how faith and works are so closely tied as Catholics, because as 47% of respondents said working to help the poor and the needy, so the corporal works of mercy. But we go back to Pope Leo XIV, and one of the hallmarks of the Augustinians is that when you have that love of God, that we have, obviously, in that personal relationship with Jesus Christ, it must impel us, by very definition of that, to love of neighbor. And we're seeing that playing out in how Catholics are responding in this poll.
And we want to be honest, therefore, that this poll, indicative of, you know, 50% of Americans, doesn't therefore speak to what we would consider devout or devoted practice of the Catholic faith in the fulfillment of all the tenets of the Church.
That's right. So when we look at and we break down these numbers, and I don't want to give everyone a blizzard of, of statistics, but essentially that around 47% U.S. Catholics have some ties. Only 20% identify as Catholic in this poll. Now, that's a little lower than what we typically see for national averages when you look at how various polling and also how the demographics work in the census and other things. We average about 24-25% of the overall population as Catholic. So this is a little lower than that. Mm-hmm. But it does give that option of 9% consider themselves to be culturally Catholic, and then 9% are ex-Catholic, and then another 9% report a connection through a parent, spouse, or past Mass attendance. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting spread when we look at about 47% or so. That 9% culturally Catholic is the one that also caught my eye, because it tells us that they're still hovering around the Church, in the sense of that the teachings of the Church, the life of the Church, the ethos is still something that is significant to them, to the point where they would actually designate themselves as cultural Catholics.
Right.
That 9% number of ex-Catholics does, to be honest, seem a little low, given the departures that we've seen.
Yep.
But again, it's how you're breaking down these numbers.
Right.
But again, and you raise a really important point, Marcus, that the key to understanding the sort of the lens for a lot of this is Mass attendance. How respondents who are Catholic respond to the frequency of Mass and or the lack thereof. How regularly do they attend Mass is also, as we have found in EWTN News' own polling, like with Real Clear Opinion Research,
right,
that the more often you go to Mass, the more consistent you are in adhering to or affirming the key elements of the Catholic faith. And that is certainly something that's borne out in this poll as well.
You know, considering all of what you just said, Matthew, you and I have bemoaned the fact that while Pew Research tends to be reliable in terms of their polling data, I never seem to know people like you or me being called to be part of those polls.
Right, well, Matt, you're making the bold assumption that I'm a good Catholic, but we're all obviously a work in progress, as I like to say. But no, I think you're making a key point that when you're trying to do sampling, you want to make sure that you are in fact covering and getting a proper estimate, a proper assessment of all of the Catholics. And then we still have one of those ongoing challenges in polling like this of how do we define a Catholic? You know, I just joked that we can't define a woman. Well, in some cases, how we define a Catholic is often fraught. It is also sometimes subject to a lot of discussion. Is a Catholic somebody who adheres to all teachings of the Church? Is a Catholic somebody who faithfully goes to Mass every Sunday? Is a Catholic somebody who professes their faith publicly? I mean, so how we go about classifying that, and I think that's where Mass attendance is always so important, and as well as living the life of the sacraments, because so many, as Pope St. John Paul II said to America a number of times when he paid visits here, he said, you know, America, your communion lines are long, but your confession lines are short. So are we availing ourselves of the sacraments, in particular of penance, as we make ourselves, and we're supposed to make ourselves worthy to attend Mass, to receive the Eucharist? If that's the case, then how does that factor into assessing what is a Catholic?
And first off, spot on impression of Pope John Paul II.
Thank you.
accent. We are continuing this conversation on the other side of the break with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and we're talking about church news right now. And when we come back, we want to talk about Pope Leo XIV and some of the statements he made to astronomy students about the wonder of the universe. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Join Bishop Earl Boyer and clergy from around the diocese June 21st at 10 a.m. for a Mass at the Lansing Lugnuts Ballpark and a Eucharistic procession to the steps of the state capitol. There'll be an opportunity to receive the indulgence for the Jubilee year. Just RSVP at EucharisticJourney.org to let them know that you'll be joining Bishop Boyer for this opportunity to be Christ's witnesses to the world that is longing for the fulfillment that only can come from Him. That's EucharisticJourney.org.
When I heard other business owners say they finally found someone in the credit card industry they can trust, I wondered how he could help me. So when Mark from Schisler CPC offered to show me where all the money goes for credit card processing with a free analysis of my business, I jumped on it. He reviewed how the industry works, where we could save, and offered a no-contract guarantee on savings and excellent customer service. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Schisler CPC. Trust in them.
More information available on the Ave Maria website under Sponsor Business Directory.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Spitem, speaking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking about church news. So, Matthew, when we left off, you were starting to touch on what John Paul II told us about the sacraments, and I'd like to take a step back to a grander sacramental worldview, a la the wisdom of Pope Leo XIV, speaking to astronomy students.
Yeah, that's right. It's a joy to follow all of his audiences because we're starting to get a real sense of his language, his imagery, you know, in much the same way that in the early days of Pope Francis and that we were starting to get a sense of him too. In fairness, we had a much clearer understanding of Pope Benedict XVI because he had been on the stage, so to speak, for so long that being Pope in many ways was an affirmation of everything he had said before. With Francis, we were interested in all of those little details, and now we're really starting to see that with Pope Leo XIV. And I think one thing that he is very good at, we saw that with his video message to the Mass at the Chicago White Sox in their stadium. I don't know if they were baptized, so that's something we'll have to keep an eye on. But there's a consistency in his language of reaching out to young people, but as giving them a task, but doing so in a way that really encourages them to something that's bigger than they are.
Right.
You could see that when he was talking to young people at the White Sox Stadium, where he's calling them that you are the church, you are part of us, you have a responsibility there. And in much the same way that when he met with the participants of a biannual summer program that takes place at the headquarters for the Vatican Observatory, and that's out at Castel Gandolfo. What he was exhorting them to do was to appreciate the wonder of the universe, the beauty of the universe, but then also to lean into the excitement that it would be right now as we're seeing all of these great breakthroughs in technology and in astronomy and astrophysics, and then ask them to be generous, as he says, in sharing what you learn and what you experience as best you can and however you can. So it's not simply calling on them to do something, it's calling on them to live.
Right.
And to look at the wonder around them and then to live.
You know, at the risk of reading too much into the Holy Father's sentiments, I have to admit that it certainly sounds like he himself, just from his own words, it sounds like he himself is a man who takes the time to appreciate the imagery, beauty, and therefore the wonder of the universe himself.
Yeah, I was thinking that very thing, Marcus, because he talks about how thanks to the developments in like the James Webb telescope, which as a longtime, very, very amateur astronomer, somebody who is deeply interested in astrophysics and cosmology, the images from the James Webb do exactly what Pope Leo talks about. They fill us with wonder, but also a mysterious joy. And he then talks about the fact that as we peer through these images, we can see them into the, as he puts it, the atmosphere of exoplanets where life may be developing, study the nebulae where planetary systems themselves are forming. He ties it to the beauty of Scripture,
right?
Of how the authors of Scripture, obviously they did not have the James Webb, they didn't have the Hubble telescope, and yet they had what he refers to as a poetic and religious imagination about creation. And I think there's a sense there that he has very much studied a lot of this.
Yeah.
He's not simply relying on people to write his presentations like this, but he is, I think, bringing to bear his experience, I think, as a mathematician.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at precision, but then he's also looking at the simply the awe, the beauty of God's creation. And I think that's, it's a joy that really does come through every time he makes remarks along these lines.
If I may, on that vein of the beauty, having awe for the beauty of God's creation, to consider the assisted suicide bill in England and how it's going to be a direct attack and affront to the human person.
Yeah, this is the very grim news for the week, and that is that the end of life bill is going to be taken up for, I think, a final vote, last I heard, in Parliament. It'll be, I think, tomorrow. And essentially what this is going to do is open up the floodgates for the end of basically the, much of the culture of life. We've already seen the unraveling in England just this week also of opening the floodgates of abortion basically on demand. So it always goes hand in hand, doesn't it, with euthanasia and assisted suicide. It's always about ending life. Mm-hmm. It isn't about sustaining it or helping it or fostering it or protecting it. It's always about death, either in an unborn state or at the end of life, in however they define it. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. But it's going to have very, very practical results. And that is something that the British bishops are very concerned about, and that is that Catholic hospices and care homes may end up actually shutting down in the face of this new bill.
Yeah, it's simply incongruent and incompatible with the Church's continued stance on the dignity of human life and its sanctity, its owing its accountability to God. So we'll have to pray for England and for these Catholic hospices. In light of this conversation of the dignity of human persons, there's a piece in Catholic News Agency about the life of the first black American Catholic priest. Let's talk about that briefly.
Yeah, well, when we talk about great and heroic figures, one of the names that always comes to mind is Father Augustus Tolton. And I have a particular fascination with him, as you know, because of the great interest that exists in American Catholic history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had the privilege of studying a little bit about all of that and having written on it. But essentially, this is the story of a young man who was an African-American who served as the first black Catholic priest in the United States, as you say. And in that journey, because of he was, you know, born in 1854, as I remember, I think he died in 1897 at a pretty young age, I think in his early 40s. He was somebody who faced so many obstacles, so many seemingly insurmountable paths to becoming a priest, and yet overcame all of them. Now, he obviously was preceded as sort of the priest in this sense by the Healy brothers, who were African-American but actually passed as white or Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes nothing away from Venerable Augustus Tolton in that sense. And his family history, he was born into slavery. And then his family was able to escape the life of slaves and made their way to Illinois and grew up thanks to the church in a way that fostered a priestly vocation. But here's the thing. He was rejected essentially by every major seminary in North America and was eventually allowed to study in Rome at the Pontifical Urbanianum. So that's the Pontifical Urban University, which was essentially created and served as a university for training of missionaries. And then he wanted to be a missionary in Africa, but instead he was sent back to the United States to be a missionary, to be a voice for the gospel where? Among his fellow African Americans. And there, really, the whole story is just an extraordinary one.
The fact that he was so determined, and with the exercise of the gifts God had given him, he was quite the Renaissance man. You know, his fluency in languages, his manifest desire for the evangelization in a missionary capacity was very evident.
Oh, very much so. And I think he understood, having lived the experience of so much suffering, so many of the challenges, that made him truly aware of what it means to be a missionary, and he was, but he was so much more than that as a priest, as a preacher, as somebody who was fluent in understanding what was needed in his time. And he died far, far too young.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Matthew, thank you very, very much always for making the time. I enjoy these very much.
Me too. God bless.
My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTNU. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Mother Teresa said, "The poverty of being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for is the greatest poverty." At St. Joseph's Helpers, their mission is not only to repair homes for those in need, but to repair hearts by providing companionship and peace of mind, especially for the veterans and the elderly. Their dedicated volunteers give their time to help with small household repairs, including minor plumbing and electrical. To request service, volunteer, or donate, visit St. Joseph's Helpers today at sjhelpers.org. That's sjhelpers.org.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
This week on Christ is the Answer, we begin Father John's series on the Ten Commandments. After freeing the Hebrews from slavery in Egypt, the Lord gave Moses the new rule to which the people of God would abide as part of the new covenant. The most recognizable of these rules are the Ten Commandments. Join us this week as Father John expounds on the first and second commandments and asks the question, why be good? Tune in for Christ is the Answer, Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
St. Gregory of Nazianzus once said, "He who does acts of mercy should do so with cheerfulness. The grace of a good deed is doubled when it's done with promptness and speed." The best way most of us can learn this approach to Christian service is in our family lives. That's why prompt, generous, consistent, and cheerful attention to each other's needs is such an important part of the liturgy of domestic church life. Every day, ask each other this life-changing question. What's one small thing each of us can do to make each other's lives a little easier or more pleasant? Then, remember to do those things as a way of letting God's love shine out through you in your family. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Neo-atheism, in fact, atheism throughout its history, has always promised secular progress. It has promised a utopia wherein human beings would finally flourish, free of the shackles of the mythology and constraints of religious belief. Yet, religion and violence, conversely, are often cited as going hand in hand. The truth of the matter, however, is that we've seen that without moral accountability to God, the 20th century alone has demonstrated that we become bloody. We become the very authors of our own bloodshed. Joining me to have a conversation about this is Dr. Thomas Howard, Dr. Thomas Tal Howard. He's the author of Broken Altars, Secularist Violence in Modern History. He's the professor of humanities and history and chair of Christian ethics at Valparaiso University. Tal, it's great to speak with you. Thank you so much for making the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm joyous to do so, especially given that today we commemorate the feast day of St. Athanasius, and we've been talking about the mystery of the Incarnation. The fact is, Jesus Christ completely transformed the development and trajectory of civilization and history. The past 2,000 years are evidence of that. Now, in the face of this, you have done great work in talking about how when God, especially the God of Christianity, is jettisoned from a societal sphere, what inevitably follows is secularism, and you define three kinds of secularism. So let's broadly define these so that we can proceed with diving deeper.
Sure. Yeah, in my book, Broken Altars, I speak, first of all, of passive secularism, and that is more or less the American model of separation and church and state, and I have fairly positive things to say about that, but two others are more worrisome and I think have led to violence. One is combative secularism. Mm-hmm. This is a more radical rejection of Christianity, you know, the history of iconoclasm and bloodshed against the church going all the way back to the French Revolution. And then finally, I speak of eliminationist secularism, and this is the more Marxist-Leninist variety. Mm-hmm. Of course, Marx famously, you know, called religion the opium of the masses, and the Bolshevik Revolution attempted to operationalize that, or at least hasten it in its attack on the Orthodox Church, but also other forms of Christianity and religion in the Soviet Union.
And so in that light, then, when we talk about passive secularism, we do see some kind of a merit come out of it, and especially within the American constitutional context, because even in the separation of church and state, there's a recognition of the place here in especially mainline Protestantism as one of the pillars that upholds the virtue and moral accountability of society.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I mean, probably one of the great observers of the difference between the American model and the French model is the 19th century intellectual Alexis de Tocqueville. And I think he recognized that while religion was formally, not part of the state in the United States, it still had a strong role in society and was important for community formation and morality and those types of things.
So in that light, when we talk about, say, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, when we talk about establishment clauses,
we start to understand that there's a very unique way in which this great American experiment has enshrined passive secularism.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The First Amendment captures it well. I think the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights does fairly well, but also the documents of the Second Vatican Council, the Catholic mm-hmm. Church, the document on religious liberty, in some ways echoes the American arrangement.
So then as we develop from there, then we can also look and juxtapose the kind of revolution that took place in America versus, for example, the French Revolution, which is a different kind of secularism.
Yeah, that's true, especially, the revolution famously starts in 1789 mm-hmm. with the storming of the Bastille. But in 1793 and 1794, it took a very Jacobin radical turn that resulted in the destruction of monasteries, the turning of the Church of Notre Dame briefly into the Temple of Reason, essentially a war on Catholics in the Vendée region mm-hmm. in western France, and it did turn much more, anti-clerical.
And you see particular attitudes come out of the French Revolution that also begins to reshape the way human persons are thought in light of societies, how societies are thought, and even morality and truth. So tell us more about that.
Well, I think for some of the more radical exponents of the revolution in that phase and the inheritors of that legacy in the 19th century, there was an attempt really to extricate humanity from religion. Christianity, certainly the established church. So that becomes an important trajectory of modern political intellectual development.
How much of the French Revolution's influence do we see in the development of modern eliminationist secularism?
Yeah, I think both eliminationist secularism and combative secularism, as I define them in the book, can be traced back to the French Revolution. But I would say even before that to what the intellectual historian Jonathan Israel calls the Radical Enlightenment. And they both possess what I call a stadial understanding of history. So history moves in stages,
right.
If I may simplify greatly, from more religious to more secular than scientific phases of humanity. And you know, that was sort of the utopian promise or delusion, if you will.
And that promise, obviously, we've never seen it delivered. If anything, when we take a look at Nietzsche's The Gay Science and that story of the parable of the madman, we see that he was considerably prophetic. What we saw take place was man's willful, quote-unquote, murder of God and therefore accountability to a divine source for our morality. And when that was jettisoned, we've seen tremendous bloodshed.
Yeah, I think Nietzsche was quite prophetic in that way. In some ways it is a moral vision, but it's not one that recognizes the human being as having innate dignity and created in the image of God. But it transfers morality to a imminent stadial human project where some eggs need to be broken to make the omelet, so be it. And so, quite tragically, reformers like Lenin, certainly Mao Asia have a very expendable understanding of the individual human life to realize a larger utopian project.
Tell us more about Lenin and how he jumps upon the Marxist principle, but he really becomes a catalyst for this widespread totalitarian Marxist regime. And his criticism of the thought of people like Gorky, even.
Yeah, that's true. In some ways, Karl Marx in the 19th century didn't write that much about religion. He mm-hmm. does famously speak of the opium of the masses, the opium of the people, but he did not necessarily leave a blueprint for how religion would be exercised from human society, but assumed it would as the inexorable march of history went forward. Lenin, I think, and others sort of radicalized this, and they recognized that the Orthodox Church in Russia, which had, you know, a quite dependent relationship on the Tsar, and certainly, you know, it had its own problems. But he recognized that so long as the Orthodox Church had captured the hearts and minds of people, it was going to be a source of dissent, a source of political dissent. So really beginning, in the early 1920s, you know, he advocated more radical measures. But, to some of his fellow communists like Gorky and others who wanted to come up with some modus vivendi with religion, he really felt that that cannot be the case. He was, you know, quite insistent on a very sort of radically secular utopian vision.
My guest is Dr. Thomas Howard. He's the author of Broken Altars, Secularist Violence in Modern History. We are continuing this conversation on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Ox Peter.
Hi, this is Ed Bahura with Sylvan Learning Centers. This is one of our many 5-star Google reviews.
I would like to take the time to thank all of the staff at Sylvan for helping my daughter achieve her goal of attending the University of Michigan Ann Arbor with a full scholarship. My daughter has been able to maintain all A's in math and increased her SAT score by 200 points as a result of attending Sylvan.
To learn more, call 1-800-EDUCATE or visit sylvanlearning.com.
Honey, did you ever call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor for that free roof inspection?
I knew I forgot something.
Roof leaks can cause mold buildup or even roof collapse. Protect your family today by calling local Catholic Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your roof, siding, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Ron Finn here, inviting you to join Dave Basharis, Pat Odie-Murray, and me for Morning Offering, the Catholic way to start your day.
We welcome some very special guests each day, including Teresa Tamio, Andrew Reinhardt, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and Matthew Archbold. Plus, my chat with Pat, talking with Catholic experts from all over.
Plus, we're having fun along the way, so you can start your day with a smile. Morning Offering, weekday mornings at 8, here on the Ave Maria Radio family of stations.
This summer, take a vacation that lifts your spirit and soul. Join Corporate Travel for the annual Grand Getaway on beautiful Mackinac Island, August 3rd to the 5th. Experience historic Grand Hotel, powerful talks from Father Mike Schmitz, Steve Ray, Dr. Edward Sree, and Father Leo Padalinghug, plus live broadcasts with Teresa Tamio, daily mass, four-course dinners, and dancing. Faith, fellowship, and fun in one retreat. Only a few rooms remaining. Don't miss out.
Book this Ave Maria Radio trip now by checking the travel page on avemariaradio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Mark Spies. I'm talking with Dr. Thomas Howard, author of Broken Altar, Secularist Violence in Modern History. So, Tal, I want to pick up where we left off, but to jump further ahead, we can start considering different revolutions throughout history in a particular way. We can think about different versions of modernization, secularization in places like Mexico, Spain, Turkey, and the advancement of the Ottoman Turks. And in light of all of this, what we can begin to see is a real jettisoning of these foundational Judeo-Christian principles about the human person and therefore about culture and society.
That's right. I mean, just to speak of all of these, they're different in some ways, and the term I apply to these is combative, combative secularism. And but the Mexican Revolution in the early 20th century had a strong anti-clerical dimension. The Spanish Civil War, you know, while being no apologist for Franco's side, the Republican side, killed almost 7,000 priests, including 13 bishops. It was quite bloody. And of course, with Turkey, I mean, this we're talking about Islam there, but the Kemal Atatürk, the main figure in the Turkish Revolution in the 1920s, really it was a kind of a Western imported top-down secularism was quite draconian in many ways. And as I argue in the book too, this kind of secularist overreach sometimes plays a causal role in inspiring kind of religious extremism at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Graham Greene's The Lawless Roads really does highlight a lot of the events that the Catholic priests and even the Cristeros underwent during this Mexican Revolution. Maybe you can paint a clearer picture for us.
Well, you know, it varied some by state, but like in the state of Tabasco was one of the most extreme, but there were attempts to abolish religious holidays, to kill certain priests to try to discourage others. And then with the Cristero War, that was similar type of backlash that is inspired by the what I call at several points in the book secularist overreach that does not sit well, you know, especially with some of the lowest and more pious members of society.
Let's talk about Turkey a little bit and the rise of modern Turkey. How you describe them rightly, that secularist overreach describes this revolution well, and how they sought to disestablish religion from the public sphere and also control it.
Yeah, that's right. That control is an important term. I borrow a phrase from the political scientist Timothy Shaw called conflictual integration, and that is where Kemal Atatürk really wanted to bring Islam under the purview of the state, but many traditional elements of Ottoman civilization, you know, the offices of the Sultanate and the Caliphate, the Sufi orders, which were beloved by many people, the famous whirling dervishes.
Yep.
He saw those as politically problematic, and even the hat, the fez that people wore, was abolished in the 1920s and 1930s. And I should say, even, you know, in Turkish, they hardly had a word for secularism, but they borrowed the French laïcité, which comes into Turkish as laïklik, I believe. I do really not speak Turkish. I'll just use the term draconian, top-down, quite sudden attempt to overthrow many aspects of traditional Turkish Islamic society.
In fact, Kemal very honestly, it was very explicit that he saw the caliphate as a threat to his desire for an absolute totalitarian reach. And so he was determined to see its removal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, he did it sort of in two stages. But, I mean, when the Sultanate was abolished, you know, he made indications that the caliph, that role as a sort of a more of a religious office would continue, but I think you're perfectly right. So long as that existed, it would be a sort of a pole of moral authority outside the purview of the church, almost like sort of a Muslim pope. Mm-hmm. I think for his statist ambitions, his nationalism, secularism, he could not abide that. And so it was, to the great regret of many Muslims, it was abolished.
But obviously Turkey didn't stay that way. In fact, there was kind of reaction, some might call it an overreaction to Kemal's regime upon his death, especially within, I want to say, about a decade after his death.
Yeah, well, there was, I mean, his successor, continued the secularizing agenda, but really, I mean, the big story of Turkey throughout the 20th century is this type of extreme secularism never set well with a fairly pious population, and different political attempts to overthrow it, to undo him, were then in turn countermanded by the military and the judiciary and parts of the state bureaucracy that were fairly loyal to what's often just called Kemalism.
Mm-hmm. And so from there, then, we can start looking at, the then USSR, the grander Soviet Union. So you get the whole Bolshevik Revolution, the October Revolution, and that paves the way for eventually World War II. And you see here there's a real systematic push in different phases for the complete overreach of a secularist government and the complete eradication of a hold of religion in the societal sphere.
Yeah, that's true. We mentioned Lenin earlier, but, with Stalin, assuming power after power struggle with Leon Trotsky, he takes the secularism to extreme levels in the late 1920s and the 1930s, a very explicit anti-religious propaganda. The destruction of churches, the creation of what are called museums of atheism that try to portray religion in the worst possible light.
Yeah.
And also in the 1930s, the secularizing agenda was expanded not just against Orthodoxy, but to other faiths as well in different parts of the Soviet Union, including Judaism, Buddhism, and Islam.
I think we often take for granted historically how systematic the Bolshevik Revolution was, because they also made sure to target the young for their propaganda to hold as they desired. They wanted to make sure that from the ground up, demographically, any notion of religious affiliation and fidelity was completely rooted out.
Yeah, that's right. Both in education and other forms of propaganda, there was this one organization called the League of Atheism or the League of Godlessness. In 1929, it changed its name to the League of Militant Atheism. And, one of the most frequent sort of propaganda images is of a young person sort of looking at this world of Soviet modernity, but having an older babushka portrayed mm-hmm. very negatively with like a cross and various other religious symbols, sort of trying to pull the child back to darkness. So that type of propaganda was quite quite pervasive. And then also, historical materialism, Marxism, Leninism became the guiding dogma in education at all levels, essentially.
That's why it's almost laughable if it wasn't so drastic and cynical that Stalin's attitude towards the Orthodox Church changed slightly at the outbreak of World War II. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was a huge pivot, and, some have interpreted that as, this Orthodox Caesaropapism trying to marry the church to the state, and it has some trappings of that. Mm-hmm. But I think the better way to analyze this is what I called earlier conflictual integration, where on the one hand, a certain public recognition of the Orthodox Church. And essentially, he needed to do this in the war context because he recognized Orthodoxy was connected to Russian nationalism, and he wanted to gin that up in the Great Patriotic War. But at the same time, just the level of surveillance and penetration of the state and the security forces within the church in the post-war period
was fairly extensive. So, and you know, in some ways, you could almost interpret that as, you know, keep your friends close but your enemies closer type of move that he pulled off there.
How much did Sputnik and Gagarin have as an influence in terms of propagating these further very anti-religious sentiments across that entire part of the hemisphere?
Yeah, so I mean that pushes it up in time a little bit to Khrushchev, and you know, with Sputnik and the Soviet programs, that you know it did continue the anti-religious atheist propaganda, but it sort of gave it this cosmic dimension that, you know, man has traveled to outer space and there's no God there, and sort of a crude propaganda continued, you know, but with this, you know, this space or technological dimension as well.
And I guess in some, I know we're not only moving ahead historically, but also expanding geographically. Just very briefly, how much was Asia, Red Asia, as you rightly call it, impacted by the removal of a Judeo-Christian foothold in those countries?
Well, you know, in Asia, certainly after like the 49 revolution in China, there was a real turn against Western missionary, you know, activity at that point. The Chinese Revolution and then certainly the Cultural Revolution of the, you know, 1960s and 1970s was a scorched earth, not just against, you know, Christian elements in Asia at the time, but also against, you know, Buddhism, Islam, and various salvation sects, even the Confucian heritage targeted at that time. It's, you know, in historical terms, it's, you know, the Chinese situation, it's a profound, you know, clash between tradition and radical.
So we need to stop there, Thomas. My guest has been Thomas Howard. We've been talking about secularist violence. Stay tuned for the next hour. I'm Marcus Peter.